If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. 2 minute drill. I talked while you were talking to me, so I'm not sure what that message was, Chad. Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know. That's a message I did need to get. It is the 2 minute drill around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they are happening. The drill brought to you today by our friends at Twin Peaks. Listen, it's been a long week. You've worked enough. Get over to Twin Peaks. Doors are open. Give it a little patience, right? They have limited capacity. They have all the rules and regulations that they have to adhere to try to keep safety first, and that is what they are doing. But that 29-degree beer, they're made from scratch menu. Yes, eats, drinks, and the scenic views are back at Twin Peaks. And, of course, you can get that great food to go as well. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com to check out the menu and make the call, put in your order. Twin Peaks in Olathe and Twin Peaks in Independence. They are open. Great place. We're getting sports coming back. Hopefully life getting back to normal. Twin Peaks getting back to normal as well. Go see them today. TwinPeaksRestaurants.com is where you will find them. Let's start things off here on the drill. Chris Domino, 680 The Fan in Atlanta, Georgia, leads us off. Chris, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Can I ask, I'm not looking to age you, but every time I hear at the beginning of the segment when you announce the cities, are you old enough to remember your father going bat blank crazy with a regular map, like a fold-out map, trying to figure out where he was going to go? And then, I mean, can you imagine? I throw a map in front of my kids, like the fold-out kind, just for crafts and giggles. They could not believe that this is the way that people actually went five states from where they started the trip.
It is the equivalent. Listen, I went back and forth. One of my prized possessions, driving from Kansas City to Syracuse for school, and then I even remember as a kid driving around looking at colleges. We looked all over the Great Lakes, the Big Ten, and everywhere. And one of my prized possessions was my atlas with the plastic, you know, cover around it where it could fold in half, and it had a Velcro thing. Man, pop that open and know where it is. All right, look, we need the 410. It's going to be coming up here. You know, be ready for it. It should be in about a mile. Okay, after that, we need the 340. Like, it was a sense of pride that you could navigate with a map. And now your kids look at you like you're using the stars to try to get around.
I'm fairly intelligent. Yeah. That whole scale thing always got me. How many miles? I don't understand this at all. I don't know what 6 inches is. I don't know what 12 inches is. Ridiculous.
Oh, man. Nothing worse than when you got out, moved things around, and then you put the damn map in the back seat. Oh, it's in the back. Oh, my God. What the hell am I going to do? I got to get to the map. You're trying to drive with your knees and reach back and grab it. Good times. Good times. That's what we're talking about here, kids. We are talking about good damn times. All right, Chris. Always great talking to you, brother. I hope everyone's good in your neck of the woods. Let's talk a little bit about Kirby Smart. He, like many, are saying that the players are safer on campus in this coronavirus time. Just lip service to get the paycheck going again? Or is there actually some truth in the fact that they would be safer there?
Yeah, I'll tell you why I believe it's true. Look, I'm not telling you everybody's not working an ankle, because I believe everybody at some point is working an ankle. But I do think when you look in a coach's eyes, or more importantly, maybe your teammate's eyes, and everybody has to be on board with, do you understand what we're not only attempting to do, but what we need to do? I think there's a little bit more control in that atmosphere. You know, I don't know what guys are doing at home, and neither do they. I mean, you can tell a coach, you can tell a teammate anything. I've just been in my room the whole time. I don't know what you've been doing. I'm not telling you we're going to put, you know, ankle monitors on these guys, but I think when a responsibility of, you want to get in my doghouse, don't follow these rules. You want to lose the respect of your teammates, don't follow these rules. And the rules are, we have to be as safe as possible. If there is such a thing, by the way, when you're playing football, I'm not immune to the idea that you're asking guys to play football when we've had a 6-foot thing going on all across this country. But I do think there's a responsibility factor that might make it a little bit easier to believe that guys will be in an environment that's more controlled at that point.
I believe that they will spend the money it takes to be disinfecting the gym and to bring guys in uh-huh. waves of 10 so that they're all spaced. I buy that. You know, that's one of the things I've heard is like, hey, working out here is safer than going to their local gym. Okay, I buy that. Not that local gyms aren't doing everything they can, but I just know how much money's involved in the football
exactly.
team and how many people they'll throw at trying to make this happen. My thought is, you know, I think a kid's less likely to be out in a bar all night if he's home with mom and dad than he is on a college campus. I mean, we watch some of the behavior all over the country and, of course, in our backyard in the Ozarks right. here over Memorial Day weekend. Like, I expect if everybody's back on campus, the hot spots are going to be the hot spots, and they ain't going to look real different. And so what you're trying to do is keep the kids apart to try to keep them healthy, keep them virus-free to play football. I don't know that unleashing them on the college nightlife is definitely the spot to go.
But I don't think any of the kids will be back on the campus through the months of June, July, and even the beginning of August until they actually come back. I think what will happen is, you know, if you're told, look, I'm not telling you guys don't break rules, but don't be doing this. You want to bring the beers back, bring them back to somebody's apartment. Bring them back to a place where you guys are going to be. If you're in contact in the locker room and in the weight room, I can't help that. I believe you're going to be in contact then. Have your beer here. And really, in a place like Athens, there is not. I'm not telling you there aren't kids who quarantine there, and I'm not telling you that they're not ready to probably explode. I just think the responsibility factor, and I'm not saying for everybody, but I think for a lot of people, I think the responsibility factor of having to look people in the eye, if you blow it now. By the way, curfew, being in a bar, it's bad anytime. I think it would be really, really bad this time if you've been given a little bit more in terms of explicit rules.
How adamant are Hawks fans about getting all 30 teams back on the court? The NBA announcing today they're going to race right back out onto the court in 2 months. July 31st, I was
– Yeah.
Come on. But how much do the Hawks, do they even want to be out there?
They have about 7 home games. If you're looking at gate, if you're looking at money, local TV money is always a big thing. The general manager, because they got a guy named Clint Capella in a trade who really hasn't been able to play with them, I think they're hoping to get these guys on the court at the same time. Do I believe that 10 games with this group really will affect how they play next year? I don't. I think that's an exaggeration. But I think the idea of trying to get a guy incorporated before the draft to figure out what it is you might have is a real thing. Do I think the Atlanta Hawks need to take the court? No. I think the thing that's really interesting is when Disney announced they were opening again, speaking of huddled masses and maybe the great unwashed, if you buy into the idea that people are going to be rushing to things, are they putting these guys up in the Animal Kingdom or the Polynesian or the Contemporary and telling other folks they can't go there? I'm a little bit curious. Once Disney said they were opening, you know, how that doesn't – the NBA has enough money and they have enough hotel rooms, no doubt about it. But it was interesting that those announcements came within a couple of days of each other that we want to play there and go there. And then, oh, by the way, they're opening again. I'm kind of curious to see how the rules go. I will say this about the NBA. Unlike the sport that I know that you and I love, they seem to have kept their mouth shut about the dollars. And that seems to at least be a win in my mind because I can't take my blood pressure going up anymore. When Blake Snell, what he said, it's the only time I actually thought I was going to have the big one. I've tried to be calm during all this. But at least the NBA and even the NFL have not thrown money in our face. They're not fighting in front of the children. We're fighting this fight on the front lawn.
There's no doubt. And the Braves have a team that can win. You know, our frustration is that our minor leaguers aren't getting to play to get them better
right.
for 2 or 3 years from now when we're better. That's the frustration that we've got going on here in Kansas City. Chris Domino in Atlanta, great stuff as always, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
Listen, I hope everybody's safe and well, you and your family on top of that.
It's raining in Baltimore.
Glenn Clark from Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore, Maryland is next. Glenn, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, Saren. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. You know, we got the weekend. I treasure every weekend. It means we've made it through another week during these difficult times. So
no doubt.
We're coming up on a Friday, and I think we all should be enjoying our weekends. Those of us that get to, some folks are still working 6 days and that kind of thing in some of the more affected areas. But, you know, listen, weekends, it's tough for everybody. I get it. And, you know, the good news is we think we're still going to get football. And the Baltimore Ravens got good news in Judon signing his tender of $16.8 million. Why did he sign? Is there any talk about why he's signing? Because I think this is interesting. Chris Jones hasn't signed. I actually made a mistake. I thought there was only 2 or 3 guys who hadn't. and it was really about half and half. But now they keep kind of trickling in. Judon's the next one. The normal operation is to not sign and to wait and sit out as much of training camp as you feel you don't need, and then sign and come back in for an abbreviated training camp and play the season. My feeling is that guys are signing because they're worried there may be no season, and they want to make sure they get paid. And if they haven't signed this thing, the team can still pull it, and then they wouldn't get paid. What's the word on why Judon decided to sign now?
It's a logical enough thought. We have not heard this being part of Matt Judon. It's been a little bit different. There has not been as much acrimony between the Judon camp and the Ravens necessarily. Look, they still, you know, they want their payday, but I think that they know that they've been using this sort of as leverage, that on the open market, they don't really know exactly what Matt Judon would get, but they know he'd be paid well, and for the Ravens to protect him, they had to use the franchise tag. I think the Judon camp, and talking with sports stars a little bit, and I don't want to attribute anything to anyone because they haven't said anything on the record, I think that they've actually found this to be a benefit for them because it's given them a number to start with for negotiations, and the Ravens are sort of behind the eight ball a little bit. So the sense that I get is that it was always kind of a formality, that he would hold, you know, not hold out, but he would wait a little while, drag his feet, because it's all part of the system. The players don't like the franchise tag. They don't ever want it to appear that they're okay with it. But that, in a way, in Judon's situation, this might actually be a little bit more beneficial because it sets a baseline for negotiations with the Ravens and the hope that they will get something done there long term.
All right, let me ask you this. John Harbaugh saying that the offense needs to change. From a standpoint of, listen, they're still going to be kind of unorthodox, but he knows they're going to stack the box. Lamar Jackson's got to be a better passer. Can he be a better passer to make that happen?
Yeah, I mean, he took a big step, obviously, between year one and year two, Saran. I mean, after year one, and obviously this is a half a season that he actually played, we had some real questions about whether or not he could even be an NFL passing quarterback. We just didn't see those types of throws being made. It was a gimmicky offense, and the outside throws were wobbly, and they were tough to look at. In year two, he looked like a passer, and still largely to the middle of the field. But even some of the throws to the outside, the numbers did look like they were better. You have to project a little bit. You have to assume that if he improved that much from year one to year two, and knowing the work that he's been doing, and he's been getting together with various receivers. He's going to get his receivers again together here in the next couple of weeks. If you presume that that's a trajectory that can be followed, then yes, he can continue to improve as a passer. And look, I was a doubter, admittedly. After year one, I said, look, I think he's a hell of an athlete. I think he is very difficult to guard, but I don't know if he's really, truly an NFL passer. But after year two, he took such a jump forward, particularly on the outside balls, that I think there's every reason to believe that he can be that player to come. Now, he still has to go out and prove that, and John Harbaugh is right to point it out, and to assume that he's a finished product yet would be a poor assumption. And I don't think that we're saying he's going to be Pat Mahomes, but I think the assumption is that he showed enough to show that this is not somebody who is limited in what they're capable of doing. He's just someone who's still improving at the NFL level.
Glenn Clark, Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore. Thank you for your time. We'll talk to you later.
Well, we flew through Cincinnati, and we all got really happy.
And Mo Egger, ESPN 1530, WLW 700 in Cincinnati, Ohio. Mo, how are you, sir?
So, I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing very good. I guess, maybe better than Trevor Bauer. He is not happy about Scott Boras. There's an eight-man executive council for the Players Association. Three of those clients are Scott Boras. He's got a lot of clients. He's obviously the most powerful agent. He sends out word that no way should players be taking any more of a pay cut. And Trevor Bauer wants him butting out. What's the reaction around Cincinnati?
I think people are so put off by the posturing. I believe the reaction in Cincinnati mirrors the reaction around the country. I think most people are so put off by the posturing that even when Reds particulars get involved, nobody cares. I think it'll be interesting when and if we do have baseball, because the Reds got as involved with Scott Boras this offseason as they have, and so it's I'm sure it'll be at least a small storyline what happens when the Scott Boras guys show up and you know, get ready to do battle with Trevor Bauer. But quite frankly, I think to a degree, you'll have people who roll their eyes every time Trevor Bauer says or does anything because we hear from him all the time. And that's, I don't think that's a bad thing. I like opinionated guys, but I think you find people who just sort of go, okay, yeah, there's Trevor being Trevor. I think more than anything, it's, look, we don't care. Get the sport back on the field. And frankly, I think that's the reaction everywhere. I've kind of wondered out loud, and it's weird when you're doing sports talk radio, and I think this probably applies to Kansas City as well, but it certainly applies here. You obviously have diehard baseball fans, but I think for the casual fans that we've talked about baseball getting, that the damage has kind of been done, that their lack of interest is going to come to the forefront when they do come back, because I believe this back and forth, while I'm a little bit more, I don't like the word sympathetic, but I lean towards the player's point of view with all this. Most people don't care, and I think when something like this pops up, you really get that. I think for the most part, most Reds fans have kind of shrugged their shoulders.
Yeah. All right. How frustrating is it for Reds fans as far as the season not getting going? Because I think this is a year that there could genuinely be excitement for the ball club.
Yeah, you know, that is a huge part of it. If this is, you know, really any year since 2014, it's, well, the Reds aren't going to be good anyway, right? Now, I would stop short of saying the Reds were the odds-on favorite to win the National League Central, but they clearly put together a team that they thought could compete, and they put together a team that I think most Reds fans thought could at least be interesting, and you will certainly find folks here who thought this team, and still believe this team, has a chance to get, you know, even a non-modified postseason. And so I think that's what makes this a little bit more painful. It's not just that the Reds had a chance to be good, but you have people who have sat through the last five seasons where they've been mostly miserable, have endured a quarter century without this team advancing in the postseason, and now you're starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel, and we might not even play baseball this year. I think that's really frustrating for a lot of people. And frankly, I think they're going to take it out on this franchise when and if they do come back in 2021, if there's no baseball in 2020.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Bengals. Optimism there as well. Certainly much more optimism around an NFL season. Do we like what the Bengals have been able to do in this offseason?
Yeah, they've been productive. And you know, look, obviously the headliner is Joe Burrow. That's a no-brainer. the moment they lost their Week 16 game against Miami to wrap up the worst record in the league, we've known it's going to be Joe Burrow. It was, I think, intoxicating for a lot of Bengals fans to watch him then go on to play in the two playoff games and do what he did. So obviously, as you might imagine, a ton of excitement for him. But the bigger deal for me is, this team finally stepped out of its comfort zone. They spent a lot of money on free agents. Heck, you'll find people who are wondering if the Bengals overpaid for some of these guys. When's the last time you could accuse the Bengals of overpaying anybody? So the philosophical shift, I think, is really encouraging. There's been a surge of optimism that I think is going to be hard for this. I think it's going to be hard for this team to meet some of the wilder expectations that you'll hear people express, but they've had a productive offseason. And for me, the last 4 years, they obviously haven't been very good, but they've been thoroughly uninteresting. Now, obviously with Joe Burrow, with players they've brought in from outside, with guys they return who didn't play last year, and certainly within this division, I think they have a chance to have a pretty interesting team. I stop well short of saying this team can contend for anything meaningful, but for the first time in a while, I think the Bengals are at least interesting, and I think the hope is that by the end of this season, you know, fans could look at Joe Burrow, can look at the coaching staff, can look at the roster, and start to think about the playoffs maybe in 2021.
Are you surprised AJ Green is still with the team after all the injuries he's had the last couple of years?
I'm not surprised he's still on the team. I would have, we talked about this extensively, I would have been a big proponent of seeing what I could get for him in a trade, just because I'm not sure it makes sense to give him the kind of money he's going to be looking for at the age of 32, which he will be at the end of July, coming off a season where he didn't play a snap. I think that's a shaky long-term investment, and you know, we went through this last year with AJ where, you know, the contract status for the following season was an unknown, and it created an issue. It created a problem. But I'm not surprised that they went ahead and decided to keep him. I think they viewed introducing Joe Burrow to the NFL as best being done with A.J. to throw to. I don't really even think they really assessed what his trade value might be, which I think was a mistake. But I think they view themselves as better with A.J. Green, despite the age, despite the injury history, as they are, you know, having to play without him. And that's, you talk about what's interesting about this season. A, could he stay healthy? B, what kind of player is he going to be? Because he hasn't played in a full game since October of 2018.
Yeah, no doubt. Finally, Cincinnati Bearcats cutting soccer. How disappointing. And is that just the beginning of where the cuts start there for Cincinnati?
God, you hope not. If we don't have a football season, I think we're talking scorched earth. It was disappointing, I think, to a degree. Number one, there's a part of me that wants to commend them for kind of being the first, because we've obviously seen, you know, other sports programs get cut. I believe that Cincinnati was at least at the Division I level, the first, you know, major school to announce that a program was going to be dropped. To a degree, I think it's one of those things, and unfortunately, probably a lot of companies experiencing this, where, all right, this is something maybe we were thinking about doing anyway, and so this gives us a chance to do it. In the grand scheme of things, men's soccer costs $900,000. So if the budget gets tightened even more, I think they're going to be worth paying attention to, because they're, you know, they have sort of a Power Five-ish profile, because they've been, you know, pretty good in basketball for a number of years, a good college football program, but they have Power Five interest here in town, but they don't have Power Five pockets. You know, they don't.
Yeah.
their athletic budget is really limited. They've put a lot of money into facilities. They've put a lot of money into coaches at basketball and football. They have a really well-run athletic department, but I do sort of worry about things like track and field and swimming and diving and tennis and things like that. But I think those concerns can be echoed around the country, and I don't feel very comfortable thinking about those programs long term, just because you just know that those are going to be the first to go and have in many parts of the country.
Mo Egger in Cincinnati, great stuff as always, buddy. We really appreciate the time. Stay safe. Have a great weekend.
All right, Trent. Thanks, man. Feel like DC.
And Chad Dukes, 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C. is next. Chad, how are you, sir?
Excellent, my friend. Happy Friday to you.
Yeah, and same to you. The weekends, they are needed these days, no doubt about it. And I think we could use some sports as well. Baseball dragging their heels to stay the least, and one of the most vocal about standing their ground. I actually, by the way, have the players back on this, but a lot of people don't, which is usually the case, it seems like. But Max Scherzer out front leading the charge. What's been the reaction to Max Scherzer's comments there in D.C.?
Well, you know, Sean Doolittle, there's guys that speak up. You know, there's guys that speak a lot about issues and social issues and issues inside the sport. Max isn't really one of them. He's the guy that's going to, you know, get a broken nose and give you, you know, gut out five more innings and, you know, punch out nine more batters. He's, you know, kind of a doer of deeds. So the fact that I had Dave shining on the post yesterday, has been covering this whole thing. And the fact that it's Max is way more impactful, I think, than even other players that are respected in his contemporaries. And look, I get it. The optics on this are millionaires squabbling with billionaires while soccer is being played, hockey's getting back on track, we got fights, we got racing. So the optics couldn't be worse for Major League Baseball right now, especially since they don't seem to be arguing about the safety. It's all about the finances. But looking at what the MLB tried to pull off and looking at what the perspective is, especially as plainly as Max put it, I don't know how you can't sympathize with the players' plight. I don't know about you. I took a pay cut, you know, at my radio station. I bought it. And if they came back around and said, oh, by the way, we need to take another pay cut because that one wasn't big enough, that's very much a different situation. So I think because it's Max and because he is so respected that it's with more gravitas when he speaks up on this issue.
What's your feeling? You know, we're kind of a team that's 2-3 years away, so I don't think there's as much passion in it. You're the defending world champions. Is there optimism, pessimism? What's the feeling there in D.C. as to whether or not we're going to get baseball?
Look, I think everybody, you know, people are dying, and you want people to be, you know, you don't like people getting sick, and this stinks. People are living in fear. So that comes first. I hate to have to qualify it because we're all rational thinking individuals. But I got to be honest with you. It's horrific. The team won the World Series. They didn't get a second to celebrate it because it immediately became all about the Astros. We talked about this. They share the building with the Astros. I was down there for spring training. Every second question was about Houston. It wasn't about the World Series champions. And then they don't get their rings. They don't get their banner. They don't get any of the conversation. And you're really not allowed to bitch about it all that much because if you do, you're not sensitive. So I don't know if there's been a more slighted and discounted World Series champion than this one. Oh, and by the way, nobody picked him to win their own division this year. I had, you know, a 15 talking heads on my program, and none of them picked the Nationals to actually win the NL East. So you sit here and you combine all that, you know, it's a frustrating time considering the season he just came out and the way they won the World Series after that record horrific start at the beginning of that whole thing. So, yeah, it kind of stinks on ice, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no doubt. I get it. All right, tell me, Bradley Beal. Look, by the way, at the 9 seed, 24-40, has anybody looked more like a playoff team than the Wizards? Boy, that's you got to be itching to get back in there. It looks like it's going to be more than 16. We don't know how many more, but it seems like the Wizards are safe. They're going to be in there. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, it depends. It's such a schism here local. First of all, the fan base is it's never been more dead. It's sad to see. I've been a fan of the Bullets / Wizards my whole life, and they went through the young guns phase where Michael Jordan saying this is the next team with Juwan Howard and Chris Webber. That doesn't come to fruition. You go through the Gilbert Arenas years with Antoine Jameson and everybody else coming through town, and that doesn't come to fruition. And then John Wall and Bradley Beal, we have the best backcourt in the league. You know, look out Golden State, and then you sign the massive deal. Horrific. It's a fan base that is completely beleaguered in. But you do have a schism between it where it's, hey, we're building something here. We've got some young players. Once John gets back, he could play right now. Maybe we can contend. I'm of a firm belief that, you know, fourth, fifth seed, even the third seed, middling out, it's just you're never – it's not the way you're going to win in the NBA. And that's probably the ceiling of a Wizards team led by Wall and Beal. I would have broken the whole thing up. Bertans, all these guys, they're saying, hey, this is going to be the new core of this team. Yeah, there's some nice players. And maybe they go in there and they steal a series from somebody. I don't know. They're going to play hard. The problem is, defensively, they're absolutely atrocious. They're fun to watch because all their games are going to be in the 120s and the 130s. You got a young core. Is it valuable for them to get playoff time? You tell me. And the NBA is as invaluable as a Major League Baseball. I don't think so, because ultimately I think these guys are all going to be migrating anyway. But I don't know. There's a newfound respect for John Wall here. Locally, sorry, when you talk about the way that he's handled himself and the way that he's ingratiated himself in the community and the way that, you know, he seems to be handling the injury as well as he possibly can. And there is a little bit of optimism about seeing those guys for one more season, like go out there and try to, you know, bang away in this Eastern Conference that's opened up. So this year, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. I think more people are going to be interested in the Capitals, obviously, because they have another chance to win a championship and they have to deal with this bye week and what are the hub cities and all that. I think probably most of the focus is going to be on the NHL spot.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's the one where you really got a chance. And maybe even one of the favorites now that you get a little time off. Last one, Bradley Beal. Does he get traded?
No, I don't think he gets traded. I think they've had multiple opportunities to blow this thing up, to detonate it. I think Ted Leonsis likes these guys. There's loyalty there. I think he likes the direction that Tommy Shepard has the team going in. I'll say this, they're acquiring draft picks. They're valuing the draft process way more than they did before. And I think that's probably, you know, Ernie Grunfeld never met a draft pick that he didn't hate and despise and wanted to send out of town. And if you're going to take more shots of this thing and take more swings at it, you have a chance. You know, stumble across some good players and keep them around for a couple of years. Hell, maybe you stumble into a run. I don't think they're going to win anything meaningfully with, you know, any type of group they have here right now, but I also don't think they're going to do anything to blow it up.
All right, final now, because I thought of one more. If The Last Dance had an 11th episode, 11th and 12th, and it was about the Wizards, what would the takeaway have been?
Wow. Which you mean the Jordan Wizards or what else
yes,
are we talking about?
The Jordan. Yeah, the Jordan Wizards.
I got to say.
And Jordan's time there and how Jordan's viewed and whether or not he's a jerk and was he a winner and what all was going on with that third, that second comeback.
Funny, if there was a Last Dance about the Wizards, I'd like for it to be about Gil and Javaris Crittenden and the pistols in the locker room and all that stuff. Yeah. But it would be focused about, it depends on who made it, but about how differently Jordan's time with the Wizards is viewed here than it was everywhere else. And the electricity that he brought and the performances and the fact that the Washington Wizards were relevant, those horrific uniforms, all of that. It's a much more positive thing, an event and pocket in time here locally, because he didn't play poorly. And he, you know, he didn't represent this area poorly. And everybody kind of enjoyed having the biggest figure in all of sports reside here and quote-unquote choose to come here. I think probably that would be the focus, is that everybody else views that as a laughing stock. It's kind of lumped in there with him attempting to play baseball, but not so much if you're, you know, like me from this area and have really fond memories of going down and seeing him play in that building for your team.
The only man with the stones to take on the entire planet, Chad Dukes, Chad Dukes versus the world, his great radio show there on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Chad, great stuff as always, buddy. Stay safe and have a great weekend.
Thank you, brother. I always appreciate you having me on.
Feel good!
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was there for Montana Magic at Arrowhead.
Back to pass, Montana. Cox his arm. Looks right. No one there. Looks left. Throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Joe Montana has done it again!
He was there for the drought breaker in Houston.
Niall Davis starts the playoffs with a bang! 106 yards! Touchdown, Chiefs!
And he was there for everything in between.
And it's crazy. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. It's a terrific race, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, the humanity.
No one knows the Chiefs better. He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
But first, the Jazz into the hour answer. Chase Elliott won his 7th Cup Series race last night. What driver won the most Cup races before turning 25? The number is 17.
Ooh, most Cup races before 25, playing for great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Go to jazzkitchen.com to check out the great menu, jazzkitchen.com, in Independence, out by the racetrack and the Legends, and, of course, at 39th and State Line, the original Jazz. You can get the best Cajun food, I would say, anywhere around, not in these parts, anywhere around. Check it out right now. Go to jazzkitchen.com. Whether you want to grab yourself some stuffed mushrooms, some catfish bites, you want to grab yourself some of their voodoo pasta, whatever it is you want, incredible seafood dishes as well. The menu, always new items coming on the menu. Check it out right now at jazzkitchen.com. Question one more time.
Most Cup Series wins before the age of 25. 17's the number.
Chase Elliott won last night. Yeah, he's pretty. He had a good car.
He is tied for
4th. 88 had a good car, too.
Seven. Yep.
88 had a good car and then got banged up. Jeff Gordon? I don't know. I'm not
Jeff Gordon's
my,
close.
My history on where they were age-wise.
Jeff Gordon's second was 15.
I don't know. I give up.
Kyle Busch.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I didn't know how fast. I don't know. You know, I got to work on my NASCAR. I really do enjoy watching NASCAR, but I got to dive back. My history is, you know, I've watched a lot of the shows. I love the Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt, Jeff versus Dale, or whatever they called it. That mm-hmm. was a great show. And I know Jeff Gordon really took off quick, but I need to work on my NASCAR history a little bit. Great Cajun food from Jazz. What we were playing for there, talking to Adam Teicher, right now on the program. Adam, how are you, my friend?
Good, Sven. How you doing today?
I'm doing very good. No complaints. And certainly excited that we're talking football and that we look like we're headed to football. I mentioned today to Mitchell Schwartz on the Zoom conference call. We'll hear a little bit of that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. But that, you know, hey, is anybody – are you talking with the NFLPA? What's going on? DeMaurice Smith is the first guy – that I have heard who has any association whatsoever with the NFL that said anything other than full speed ahead, we're definitely going to play all our games. He said a 6 or 7 on a scale of 1 to 10 on the season happening. Are you surprised that the league and the Players Association, that they're not talking a little bit more about contingencies? Like, I think right now they should be talking about moving the season up. Everybody else seems to be, when I hear Bob Bowlesby say, man, I don't know that we're going to have college basketball because it's in the cold and flu season. I'm thinking, you know, the NFL keeps saying, well, we got time. What we got is time. Yes, but I don't know that you're using it properly. Am I missing the boat on this right now?
Yeah, that might not be a bad strategy to try to get out in front of this and do it that way. But you know what? No one knows what's coming here. You know, we really don't. I think we're all guessing a little bit. You know, I do agree that, there's probably – it's probably not a slam dunk that the players will agree to a plan to come back. I mean, I feel like, there's probably some work to do in that area as well. And, you know, it's just – you think of from the start of training camp to the end of the Super Bowl, you know, you got 6 weeks of camp, including the preseason. You got 17 weeks in the regular season. You got 5 weeks in the postseason, 28 weeks. Do we really think it's realistic to think that you can get through 28 weeks without some type of interruption? You know, maybe they can figure out a way, you know, if it's only one game a week, maybe that buys the NFL a little time as opposed to baseball or the NBA or whatever. But I just feel like, it's certainly less than a sure thing that there's going to be a full season and maybe just a completed season. I mean, we just don't know what's coming here, and it's almost impossible to predict.
The impression that everybody has there, Darrowhead, is that, like, oh, we're keeping the band back together, and so we're going to run this thing back, and therefore we're in a much better spot than anybody else to come out and have a successful season. That sounds great, but nobody's repeated since 03-04 Patriots. So I'm sure a lot of other teams, and listen, the normal changeover is 6 or 7 starters for teams that we looked up for teams that play in back-to-backs. They didn't necessarily win it, but like the Seahawks playing in back-to-back, the Patriots playing in back-to-back, is that there are 6 or 7 different starters. Now, the Chiefs have managed to get it to where they might have 20 of 22 starters that are back. What might they be missing? And does the pandemic help or hurt as far as their chances of trying to repeat?
I absolutely believe it helps. The more familiarity you have during a situation like this, it can't help but be an advantage for those teams. I don't know how the teams, and this is particularly true for college football, I have no idea how the teams with new coaches are going to operate. I just feel like it's such a disadvantage they can't meet in person and they can't get out on the field together. I mean, I think that's just a huge disadvantage for them. And on the other end, I do feel like it helps the Chiefs. Does that mean automatically they're going to, you know, make the playoffs or go to the Super Bowl again or win the Super Bowl again? Absolutely not. But I do think it gives them a distinct advantage in a time of complete uncertainty. Again, I mean, it's one thing if this is going to be 28 weeks uninterrupted here once camps start. But I just feel like there's going to be some kind of disruption to the season, and it's going to favor the teams that have been there and done it before. So I do believe it's an advantage to the Chiefs.
Do the Chiefs have the kind of roster that, when they say, hey, here are our health protocols, you need to follow them so we can keep everybody healthy? Do you think they have that kind of roster to do it?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, we just don't know what's coming around the bend. You know, you like the fact that a lot of their better players are young. You like the fact that their quarterback is, you know, the best quarterback in the league, and he's still only 24 years old. So, they got a lot going for him. But, who knows once push comes to shove.
Yeah, no, that is like, because that's going to be a lot of it, right? Like you talk about having a disruption is going to be, who are the guys that are just like, whatever, and blow off any health protocols at the organization and you know, maybe the government, but whoever, but specifically the Chiefs, they say, listen, this is what we need you to do to stay healthy. and yeah. not get infected and not infect your teammates? Like, yeah. what team is most likely? Like, the Super Bowl could come down to what team can follow orders better.
Yeah, well, that's. I think you're. There's no way of knowing until you get to that point. But I get your point. You know, it's got a lot to do with discipline. You know, how can you live your life with discipline? And you know, the Chiefs have some pretty strong leaders. Will they listen to those guys? You know, probably. But you know, who knows? You know, we'll see as we go along. I think that will be a factor, though. Is guys who take this seriously and. And do maybe live their life with a little more discipline than another team.
Yeah, it's you know, it's strange environment. I just what do you think? You know, I mentioned how long it's been since anybody won back to back. We've had teams play in back to back Super Bowls before. What is it like if you look around? What would be your best guess on what's kept people out of? Repeating, right? You clearly, almost every team that wins it is either the favorite or almost the favorite going into the next season. Like, you got an idea on what the, if something's going to go wrong, what it usually is?
Well, you know, New England is, even though they haven't won back-to-back for a little while, they've been to back-to-back-to-back now. So, well, before the Chiefs took it over from them. So, you know, there's been that. Yeah, no, I really don't. I mean, it's sometimes it's just luck, you know. It was the Chiefs' season. I mean, they, you know, they were. It was just their year, and not saying who knows. Maybe 2020 is their year too. But you know, they just had a lot going for them last year, and it's hard to sort of maintain all that. You know, you look at some of the teams that. You know, injuries certainly factor into that. You know, the Chiefs had maybe their share during the regular season, but were. In pretty good shape as the playoffs went on. You know, they didn't have Chris Jones for that Houston game, but other than that, they were in pretty good shape in the playoffs. So, you know, that factors into it as well. You know, you feel like, you know, attrition's going to get you sooner or later in the NFL. So, you know, maybe it's the Chiefs' turn for that this year. And we'll find out, but, you know, maybe they certainly caught a break a little bit in that Mahomes' injury wasn't worse than it was, you know, what we all thought at the time. So just there's a lot that plays into that. And, you know, I feel like the Chiefs are as in good a position as anybody to repeat. But, you know, hey, there's good teams out there, too. I mean, Baltimore, you know, the Chiefs got a break. Let's face it. They got a break by not having to go to Baltimore and win the AFC Championship game there. That's not to say they wouldn't have done that, but we don't know. And certainly – beating Tennessee at home was going to be an easier path to the Super Bowl than beating Baltimore in Baltimore.
Matthew Judon signed his franchise tender, and he will now participate in all of their offseason, at least their mandatory, when they get to the mandatory minicamp. And then training camp, he'll be there day one, or he'll be fined. He now has opened himself up to being you know, fined for not showing up to camp. And I've talked about this a lot. I tried to not lead with it here, but I really think the single biggest issue with the Chiefs every time we chat is Chris Jones. Judon is signed. There are more guys unsigned than I realized when I went back. I had somebody email me. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, because I was saying, like, hey, listen, everybody's signed. He's like, nah, it's kind of 50-50. All right. Well, we're now beyond 50-50 as Judon is signed. And I mentioned this during the drill when I was talking to Baltimore with Glenn Clark. I said, you know, the reason I think guys are signed, usually nobody signs, and then they sign after they've, you know, sat out as much of camp as they want to sit out because they can't be fined for sitting out camp. Once you sign, you got to come in or they can fine you. And I said, I think the reason guys are signing is agents are going, wait a minute. If there's no fans and there's no season, could we get an owner? As we watch the Major League Baseball owners say, you got to take an even bigger cut. Well, if you're an owner that's about the dollars, and I don't think Clark Hunt is going to just say cut Chris Jones because I want to save money. But, you know, if Brett Beach were to say we are miles apart, then I think it does become an option. And then you don't have that $16 million guaranteed. You do go into the free agent market. I do think somebody would find the money to give him more than $16 million. But I don't think anybody, I don't think there's any $140 million deal out there when they don't know what the salary cap is next year. So what is the point of Chris Jones not taking part in the virtual offseason? There's no risk of injury, and he's not doing the virtual meetings by reports that are out there. So, which is, you know, that's how you hold out, right, in the game, and I get he wants a new contract. But, you know, there is a pretty big risk here for Chris Jones, because if they pulled the tag, yeah, he can get more than $16 million. But do you agree with me? No one's going to give him $140 million with $100 million guaranteed?
Yeah, I would think he's not going to get that, at least not right now. Yeah, I would agree with that.
And maybe even we need to suck it up if we're Chris Jones and say, not only am I not going to get it right now, I'm not getting it next year either.
I think there's significant doubt whether he will get that kind of contract. I agree with you. But obviously he's not giving up on that yet. There is a risk for him to not sign in that thing. He could certainly get that tag pulled from him, and then he's a free agent. But what's the market going to be for him at this point? Probably more than $16 million, at least on a guarantee. But who knows? Him holding out or staying away from the off-season stuff is not a bad strategy if he wants that long-term contract. Clearly, he hadn't given up on that yet. So, this might come down to a blinking contest here. Who blinks first? I think it's going to be hard for the Chiefs to keep Chris Jones at $16 million, particularly if he's not playing for them. I mean, they're going to have to do something. If the season rolls around and Chris Jones is still out, and the Chiefs are still carrying $16 million on their cap for a guy who wouldn't play him for them, that's going to be a tough pill for them to swallow. They're going to need to do something with that $16 million to make their team a little better. So, and if it's not, whether it's Chris Jones or somebody else, I think there is some leverage for Chris Jones here if he wants that long-term deal to stay away, because I do think there is some pressure on the Chiefs to get something done to lower his number and to get something out of either him or someone else with that money.
We're 47 days away from the deadline to extend him. July 15th was a long way away when the franchise tag was put on him. It's now 47 days. The calendar's going to click over to June by Monday, on Monday. And so at that point, we'll be 45 days away from that deadline. Every negotiation needs a deadline. I don't think there's any reason to panic. But at some point, I do think that, you know, there's lost revenue coming to the National Football League. Do you see 72,000 in the stands at Arrowhead?
No. Nope, no. I sure don't.
I can see a 16 or 20. I mean, I Bob Bowlesby, you know, really made an impression on me when he said, we've got to learn to live with the virus. And so I think from a fan standpoint, there are fans that are like, listen, if I've got a couple of seats in between me or whatever, you know, Ohio State's talking about 20,000 in a 102,000 seat stadium. I mean, I could see some fans in there, depending upon how the summer goes, and I can definitely see a path to playing and playing with no fans. I'm watching that happen with the Bundesliga right now and other sports and NASCAR. But, you know, at some point, like Mike Matheny made a great point. And, you know, I know there are people like I brought it up to Joe Sheehan, and Joe Sheehan's like, well, he's totally wrong. But then I had other people in professional sports who I've talked to about this, they're like, yeah, he's absolutely right. Whether you like it or not, if the owners lose money, it's eventually going to come out from somewhere. And if you believe that, then whether it's free agency, like the next wave, next 2-3 years of free agency are all going to get screwed on their contract offers, the owners are going to get their money back somewhere, somehow. All right, so that's all a way of saying that I think Chris Jones needs to understand what the economic climate is. And if I'm the Chiefs, and I hear that Jadeveon Clowney's best offer is the Browns, and he doesn't want to go to the Browns. At what point, how low does Jadeveon Clowney have to get where you say, let's sign Clowney and let's punt Chris Jones?
I mean, that could be an option for the Chiefs at some point. The problem is, I'm not sure where Clowney is right now. I'm not sure you can get him for even $16 million. So, if he wants it, particularly on a long-term deal, I mean, if he's, he's determined to get that, you know, puts him out of the Chiefs range. But
Well, and if he wants 17, 18, 19, 20 million, then the Chiefs aren't going to sign him. But there's reports that the Eagles are interested at about 10 million. That the Browns are the highest offer. He doesn't want to go to the Browns. So either the offer's not good enough or he doesn't want to play for an organization that's been a train wreck. At some point, you get to where if Chris Jones is asking for 20 and you can get Clowney for 13, 14, is that the better move to make? I mean, he fits exactly what Steve Spagnuolo's defensive linemen have looked like through the years. I mean, so does Chris Jones, by the way. But I mean, if Steve Spagnuolo says, "Oh yeah, I can make this work," you add him into the rotation. Absolutely, I can make this work. Then, and if you're the Chiefs, like if I were Brett Veach, and maybe this is one of many, many reasons why I'm not a general manager, I would very loudly and publicly be talking to Jadeveon Clowney so that Chris Jones knew that we had another direction to go. To Brett Veach's credit or discredit, depending upon how you want to view it. He has not done that. He seems to be focused on trying to get Chris Jones done. But I would make it very public and try to put some pressure on Chris Jones because I think his agents have no – I'm always leery of the agents that are Tom Cruise. What the hell was his character's name? Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
They got the one – like, he is their bell cow. They're basically new. They've broken away, and he's the one star they've got. And that generally leads me to believe that somebody's trying to make a name for themselves and hit a big home run here with the one client they've got that they can hit a home run with. I mean, if I'm Brett Veach, I'm going to put pressure right back at him. I mean, maybe he's to be commended that he's not playing that card, but I sure as crap would.
Well, if you're asking me would I want Clowney at say 12 or 13 or Jones at 16. I'll take Clowney at 12 or 13 if he wants to come and play. I don't know that Chris Jones is going to take 16. I mean, you can turn down a Clowney if he wanted to come here and anybody else you want, but you don't know that Chris Jones is going to play for you this year at 16 million. You know, if you told me, okay, you know that either one is going to play for you at this number, do you want Clowney at 13 or Jones at 16, I think I'd take Chris Jones at 16 because, we know what he looks like in a Chiefs uniform. We know what he's done for this team the last few years. But I don't know that Chris Jones is going to play for the Chiefs at $16 million. I mean, he might. Yeah. But my sense is he might be willing to hold out until he gets what he wants here. But to answer your other question, about the cap going down and all that, I'd absolutely be scared. I'd be scared as heck if I was a big-time free agent. And maybe not if I'm Pat Mahomes, but maybe everybody else, because you don't know where this thing is going. It might be that the gravy train is finally going in another direction here because of what we're talking about here. And if the cap ends up going down, you might as well take what you can get right now. So if it was me, I would take the $16 million and worry about next year because I'd hope that maybe I could get something good out of the Chiefs long term after I take their $16 million now, because I do think that holding out is not a great strategy in this environment for sure.
Adam Teicher, our Chiefs insider, with us here in the program. Adam, we're running behind. I'll skip the Final Four with you, brother. You get off the hook easy this time. Always great talking Chiefs football with you. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Good stuff, Saran. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, Adam Teicher from ESPN. We will take a break. We will come back right around the corner. Our need to know. Also going to talk to Lewis Riddick in our next hour from ESPN. That's all coming up here in the program.
The program with Saran Petro.
Does anybody out there have any questions? Why are you so stupid? Oh, that's a good question. Anybody else have any questions?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping things up here in hour number three. Coming up next hour, what you need to know, including Dayton Moore. Dayton Moore talking about the minor leagues. Royals announcing they're not going to be releasing any minor leaguers. And no pay cuts for over 150 of the Royals employees. No one's going to be furloughed. No one's going to be fired. Some of the upper management will take pay cuts, but the organization planning on getting that money back to them when better economic times come around. So the Royals stepping up and doing something very different than what the rest of Major League Baseball is. We'll hear Dayton Moore talk about the status of the Kansas City Royals here. Some of your Kansas City Chiefs as well. That's coming up in our Need to Know. That is right around the corner. And then Lewis Riddick talking about Andy Reid, where his place in history is, what people should be thinking about Andy Reid right now. That's coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Fourth quarter starts next.
The burnt end of the hour question, brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, Derek Jeter made his MLB debut 25 years ago today. Off what pitcher did Jeter have the most career hits? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.